Welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, here with our host, psychologist, and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. And Dad, if people don't already know this about us here at Family Talk, we need to let them know that here we are passionate about freedom.
And especially religious liberty, which is the foundation for, I think, all of the freedoms that are enumerated in the Constitution. And that's what brought our forefathers here to this country in the 1600s, to be able to worship according to their beliefs and their theology. And we're losing it. We're losing those freedoms, not only freedom of religion, but freedom of speech and freedom of assembly and all the other freedoms. And if we don't fight for them and defend them, they're going to go away because there are those out there who have the microphone, not one that speaks to the number of people we do, but tens of millions of people, and they are determined to undermine what we believe, and we must stand up for that belief. And today we're going to do that. We're going to do it again. We're going to deal especially with the issue of religious liberty. And we have an attorney here with us today. Bill Becker is his name, and his wife Gigi is sitting over behind us. And we have known them for many years. They are not only friends to Shirley and me, but Ryan, you have been friends with these folks as well.
And Danae. Right.
And my daughter. Yes, Danae. We appreciate your coming to talk to us, Bill, and especially to explain why you're so passionate about religious liberty. You are now devoting your responsibility as an attorney to some celebrated cases because it matters, doesn't it?
Dr. Dobson, that's an understatement. Why am I doing this? That's a question only God can answer, because I had been practicing law for about 18 years before I ever even began to understand that there was this type of law to practice where you could defend the rights of people whose religious liberty and First Amendment free speech rights were being attacked. And you hear about it all the time.
There's not a lot of money in it, though, is there? Maybe that's why there aren't a lot of attorneys that devote their lives to this cause.
It's not a get-rich-quick proposition. No, it isn't. We do this to serve God, and we do it to serve His glory.
Well, I'm most interested, and I think our listeners will be interested, in the battle you're having in the city of Santa Monica, California, having to do with religious liberty. Take us back to that case and the long struggle to defend the very right to celebrate Christmas in Santa Monica, California.
For 60 years, Dr. Dobson, the city of Santa Monica celebrated Christmas by featuring a row of life-size diorama nativity scenes, essentially featuring different three-dimensional depictions of biblical scripture surrounding the nativity, the birth of Christ. For 60 years, that was a city celebration. The atheist organizations tried to stop it back in the 80s, but they were unsuccessful. 3 years ago, one man, one individual, decided that he didn't want to see those nativity scenes at Christmas time. They offended him as an atheist. And so he embarked on a campaign to make sure the city eliminated that tradition. And last year, it responded by ratifying his activities. And they voted to ban all private unattended displays during the month of December.
Was there a legal basis for the complaint and for the decision that was made?
The atheist argued that the nativity scenes violated the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment because it signified that the city of Santa Monica was endorsing the Christian faith. The city didn't agree with that. And in fact, the city has stated publicly that they believe that their nativity tradition was legal and that it was constitutional. Nevertheless, this particular individual used the city's application process to undermine it. And this is a doctrine people should begin to understand. If you're a comedian or an entertainer on a stage and somebody in the audience is trying to stop your act, they're called hecklers. And the heckler can certainly undermine and inhibit the entertainer's ability to perform his act. In the law, there's a doctrine in the area of free speech litigation called the heckler's veto.
Yeah.
And in this case, this individual was the heckler trying to veto the religious message. And when the city ratified his efforts to do that and ban all displays in order to eliminate his offensive demonstration type of conduct, that essentially violated the First Amendment. And my client, the Santa Monica Nativity Scene Committee, was put in a position where it was forbidden from ever celebrating Christmas in Palisades Park.
How can the Constitution give you freedom of speech and freedom of religion and yet let a heckler shut you down? I mean, that's not reasonable to me. I'm not an attorney. You are. Why?
Well, that's why the doctrine exists. But the Ninth Circuit, at least, as well as the U.S. Supreme Court, have said that the heckler's veto is unconstitutional. Mm. And so our case is now postured before the Ninth Circuit, and it's been fully briefed. I have just filed a motion to ask the Ninth Circuit to allow the city to put the nativity scenes back up in Palisades Park while the appeal is pending, because, as you know, in the Ninth Circuit, an appeal these days can last maybe 3 years.
Mm. Yeah. That is one of the most liberal and some would say radical courts in the country, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. So you're going into difficult water there.
Nobody said this was easy.
Well, that's why we appreciate you doing this so much, Bill. And the truth is, these people are hecklers. What was taking place is they filed a bunch of applications to present their own quote-unquote holiday displays, but they weren't holiday displays. They were making fun of religion, and it's heckling. It's just sad. You have the Santa Monica Nativity Scenes Committee that's been building these displays and showing holiday spirit for 60 years, and it gets undermined by a bunch of hecklers. This isn't America.
It's self-avowed atheists, aren't they?
But they're not celebrating anything. That's what's sad. If you want to celebrate something, I understand your desire to celebrate like everybody else does, but this isn't celebration. It's just making fun of people. Why are we recognizing essentially hecklers?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. The fact is, they don't want to celebrate anything. In fact, they didn't even want to put up displays. The displays they put up weren't just anti-religious. They were blasphemous.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the community didn't appreciate it. But religious speech and secular speech are supposed to be able to live together in a park and a sidewalk, which are called traditional public forums. Religious speakers have the same rights as secular speakers. And in this context, the secular speaker was given the right to put up his displays. What he wanted was to silence the message that he opposed. And that's where they succeeded.
Mm-hmm.
The city should have understood that by ratifying the heckler's veto, they were acting unconstitutionally. They should have understood that it was their job as government officials to protect the First Amendment.
Do you think you will eventually win this case?
Only God knows, Dr. Dobson. I pray that we will, because I think it's significant. And this was a place where the expression of Christmas was glorified for 60 years. And in fact, the city of Santa Monica is named after a Christian saint. And there's a statue of Saint Monica in that park. So again, taking this into context, people have to understand you're not going to eliminate all reference to Christianity in this country. It's embedded in the names of cities and all kinds of institutions.
Los Angeles is the angels. Going back to the way I started the program, we're interested, terribly interested in this case, which is why we started by focusing on it. But it's really part of a larger problem, a threat to religious liberty generally. And there are thousands of examples of this taking place. I have written my monthly letter. I do hope that our listeners will pay close attention to it, to religious liberty in the military. I mean, it is unbelievable what President Obama and his administration and his Secretary of Defense and the generals who are in charge and the admirals in the Pentagon have decided to do everything they could to limit the expression, free expression of religion in the military. And I'm telling you, we cannot hold still for that.
Yeah. I never thought I'd see the day. You know, my dad was an Air Force general, retired as a brigadier general. And I grew up on Air Force bases around the world and attended church. And I never thought I would see the day when the Pentagon would threaten the rights of the chaplaincy the way they're doing these days.
Mm. There have been so many rulings, some of them coming down from the Supreme Court, that seem to be confused or cause confusion about the First Amendment as it relates to religion. Can you quote that for us and let's talk about that?
Well, the First Amendment states that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Now, these are called together the religion clauses of the First Amendment. And the first section of the religion clauses, where it speaks of respecting an establishment of religion, originally was intended to prevent a theocracy. It was intended to disestablish any national church.
Yeah.
And you'll note the fact that it says that Congress shall make no law, but court cases have incorporated that to the states. So that language is now incorporated. In fact, it's called the incorporation doctrine. So that it now applies not just to Congress, but it applies to any level of government, which means that a city, a municipality like Santa Monica, or
a school,
a teacher who works at a public school is actually a public official. And in one of my cases, in several of my cases, but one that we will be arguing before the Ninth Circuit in October, was a case in which some students were wearing their American flag clothing on Cinco de Mayo. And the principal ordered them to take off that clothing because it offended the people celebrating something that's not even an official Mexican holiday. Now, can you imagine a school official doing that? And so that doesn't involve a religious exercise, but I can give you an example of one that does. And that's another client of mine that had a T-shirt that had a pro-life message on it. She was ordered to take that off because school officials quite often don't recognize what their rights are. And I think one of the problems that has to be addressed in this country, especially in the public school environment, is that school officials and parents need to begin to understand when they are actually violating the First Amendment and when they're not. None of them seem to understand it. Mm. And the reason they don't understand it is because the law has become so confusing that practically no one understands it, including judges.
I was being interviewed by Larry King a number of years ago, and I was talking about the freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and he said, yes, but the Constitution says there must be separation of church and state. And I said, Larry, that's not in the Constitution. He said, oh, yes, it is. It's right there in the Constitution. I said, I think you better look that up. And he changed the subject. But that's what is believed out there.
Well, we know that Thomas Jefferson, in a letter to a church in Connecticut, to the Danbury Baptist Church, had written to them that he believed in the separation of church and state, a wall of separation. That was a metaphor that he used. And by the way, during those times, it was understood what that meant. It was meant to protect religion, not to protect government. And other metaphors were developed by other founding fathers that we never hear about.
So what? He wrote a letter. Right. That doesn't put it in the Constitution.
Well,
the Supreme— you can find all kinds of stuff in the letters written by our statesmen that didn't get into the Constitution. Yeah. Why was that allowed to win the day on this issue?
Because Justice Black, who wrote a decision called Everson versus Board of Education back around 1945, I believe, had a neighbor who was an historian. And he asked his neighbor to do some research for him, and his neighbor came up with that particular letter. And so when he wrote the majority opinion in that case, he quoted from that letter. So in other words, he did some really sloppy historical research to come up with it, and that ended up being engrafted in one of the most important decisions the Supreme Court has decided.
Is that what they call court-made law?
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's spend the remainder of our time talking about the people who are listening to us who are not attorneys and are not skilled in the law, what they can do to defend their constitutional rights. I'm sure there are many people out there that say, I agree with everything you said and it agitates me, but I'm one person. What can I do about it?
I have started a nonprofit that I mentioned to you called Freedom X, which is being launched to protect the freedom of expression of conservatives and Christians in this country.
I hope everybody heard what you just said. Freedom X is the name of a new organization that you're starting that will do what?
We're going to address some of the issues that we don't see being addressed by other groups. At the same time, we want to bring awareness to parents and to the community so that they have a place they can turn to and understand that they can turn to that place when they even question whether or not their rights are being violated. I'll give you just one example. A potential client called me recently from back east and said that their daughter is at a Christian university, believe it or not, at a Christian university, and was asked by one of her teachers to write an essay that violated her conscience. And she approached that teacher and asked for a different assignment and was denied that right. What is a parent to do when their child is placed in that position at a university where they're paying for that education? Now, that's a private university, so that teacher isn't necessarily violating the student's constitutional rights. But they may be violating that student's right to have a particular viewpoint. And under the federal law, that is called viewpoint discrimination, and there is a remedy for that. But I think parents and people will need to learn from not just my organization, which is just launching, but there are a number of organizations out there, how to get in contact with them, how to find that lawyer, because we're not interested in merely getting lawsuits going. That's not what our job is. We're inspired by God to serve His glory in everything that we do. Many people feel that they have no voice. Many people don't understand the law well enough to be able to know that there are advocates out there that can serve them. So we're hopeful with Freedom X that we'll be able to achieve that by reaching out to the community and establishing those kinds of relationships.
Bill, what we have been talking about today is a passion for you, but it has not always been true. You have more recently began to realize this is what God would have you do. And you have turned your practice in this direction because you believe in something. That's why I ask you to come here today, because I know how strongly you feel about that, and you're willing to sacrifice and to be vilified and all that goes along with trying to defend things that others consider anathema in this culture. Now, what turned you around? Why have you come to the place that you are today?
During my youth, well, I grew up in the 60s, and the 60s was a generation where you learned from the culture and from the media How to Disobey Your Parents. This was the time, I think, that you were beginning to write Dare to Discipline.
I was. That was 1970.
Yeah.
And it came right out of what was going on in the 60s.
And I was one that got swallowed up by the culture and by the media. And so the tension between what the culture was demanding from me and what my conservative religious parents were demanding from me caused me during my college years and thereafter to remain a reprobate, somebody who was unwilling to understand what he had been taught by his family.
What year did you graduate from high school?
That would have been 1972. So
you were in high school right at that critical moment.
That's when I was there, and those were the years of racial protests and drug abuse and all kinds of things. What happened to me, Dr. Dobson, was somewhat glacial. I came to understand that the culture wasn't serving me well. I wasn't becoming a better person because my hair was long. I wasn't becoming a better person because I smoked cigarettes. I wasn't becoming better because I wanted to sleep around with women. None of that served anything. And I always had my mother's voice in the back of my mind.
She was a committed Christian, wasn't she?
She was the spiritual leader of our family and the smartest person on earth. And she died 3 years ago, but she was a loving, wonderful Christian woman. And so her love and the love of my dad prevented me from allowing the culture to swallow me whole. So I began to make that transition. I started walking on my Damascus Road. And I eventually said a prayer when I was at my rock bottom. And I said, Lord, I understand that you don't want me to have some of the things that the culture wants me to have. And I'm finally content with that. And by the way, Dr. Dobson, I was 50 years old at the time, and I wasn't married, and I was frustrated by that. And I said, I also understand that you don't want me married, and for the first time, I'm content with that. But I want to serve you, and that's all I want to do at this point in my life. And it was very interesting because that prayer was a sincere one. I wasn't just mouthing it. And at the time, I had just met Alan Sears from the ADF. I was just starting to write a lawsuit to sue the County of Los Angeles to recover the cross on their government seal, which they had taken off. And I was feeling very passionate about that lawsuit. And within a couple months, the Lord introduced me to my beautiful wife, Gigi, and he set me on a path where today I sit here with Dr. Dobson, one of the people I most admire in this world. And so every month there are miracles and blessings that I can't really describe. If you want to talk for a few more hours, I can tell you all about them.
Well, I have followed your development and the changes that have taken place in your life, and I've been interested in the cases that you've been involved in, and I've appreciated your willingness to stand up and defend the things that I believe. And I'm glad to have you here and to let our listeners know who you are. And God be with you, and may he continue to bless you. May he rescue Santa Monica from the heckler's veto and be successful with the Ninth Circuit. That would be an answer to prayer, wouldn't it?
It would be. And all glory to God for all the work I do. But thank you for the work you do too, Dr. Dobson.
And I hope you'll pray right along with us for success in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. This work is preserving freedom for our kids and for the rights of the next generation to express their faith and freely celebrate traditions like Christmas. So that's why we continue to fight and why we also continue to pray, because our God is big enough to move mountains, even in our nation's courts. You can find a link to Mr. Becker's website and stay up to date on this court case at drjamesdobson.org. And while you're there, sign up for my dad's monthly newsletter that we mentioned earlier. It is a great way to stay informed on issues of the day that impact your family, and then support organizations like Freedom X and Alliance Defending Freedom that will stand up for your values in the culture. Finally, send a donation to Family Talk today. Freedom is worth fighting for. and we hope you'll join with us. You can donate at drjamesdobson.org, or when you call us, our number is 877-732-6825. Again, 877-732-6825. Thanks again for being with us today, and don't miss the conversation next time when we talk about spiritually mismatched marriages. That's right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.
Hi, everybody. Ryan Dobson here. And if you're going to be in the Charlotte, North Carolina area on September 27 and 28, check out the Truth for a New Generation Conference. Family Talk team member and apologetics expert Alex McFarland will be there, along with some of the nation's top speakers, to help you live out your faith and share it effectively. They include Lee Strobel, Mark Middleberg, Josh McDowell, Sean McDowell, Eric Metaxas, and many, many more. Make plans now to attend Truth for a New Generation, September 27 and 28. You can find out how at drjamesdobson.org.